Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi and welcome. Today we'll be talking with two travel writers about the allure of fall and some great places to visit in New England. Jonna Kaplan is a freelance writer and editor. She lives in New London, Connecticut and blogs at www.thesizeofconnecticut.com. Professional writer-editor Hillary Nangle has been writing about her home state for more than 20 years. She shares her finds and faves in publications ranging from the Boston Globe to the National Geographic Travelers, as well as her Moon Guidebook series for Maine. So welcome, Jonna and Hillary.
Thank you.
Let's start with a little bit about the history of New England and travel to that region. Who wants to take that on? Hillary?
You can go back into 1524. Italian explorer Giovanni de Verrazzano came first. Champlain came in 1604 with a French settlement on St. Croix Island, off which is between Maine and New Brunswick, Canada. First English settlement was Popham, Maine in 1607, but they only hung around 1 year, building the first English-built boat in the New World. They departed 1614. John Smith came exploring from Maine to Cape Cod and officially gave it the name New England. In a publication, 1616, which he called his description of New England. 1620, of course, the Mayflower arrived, Plymouth Plantation. Jump ahead to the 19th century, and that's when you start seeing more of the, well, they were first called the rusticators. They were fleeing the city filth and heat, started arriving, some to fish and hunt, others to hike, others to simply breathe the air and clean air in the era of tuberculosis. They came by train, steamship, buckboard carriage, built mansions they quaintly called cottages, or some lodged in grand hotels, a few of which still survive, especially in New Hampshire's White Mountains. You know, the Mount Washington Hotel, the Wentworth and Jackson, the Mountain View, and under redevelopment now, the Balsams. Those are all still in existence.
So when would you perceive that actual tourism dollars would start coming in? Turn of the century?
Yeah, because these people came up and they were often very wealthy. They were keeping, you know, all depends on how you define tourism dollars. If it's impacting or has an impact on the local economy, then definitely. They're building houses, they're hiring people, they're hiring cooks and chefs and chauffeurs as the automobile came into vogue. And, of course, you can't overlook the role of the artists, too, who, when they came into New England and started painting these scenes, that's what encouraged a lot of these people to come up. And so that would probably be more of your tourism allure.
Every region in the country has something to boast about, but I think that one of the greatest things is that we have such a long, varied, and rich history. Would you agree, Jonna?
Absolutely. I think whether people know it or not, often they're coming to New England for the history, because once you have the history and it's preserved, that creates the atmosphere with the beautiful small towns, the architecture in the cities, the scenic byways, the scenic routes, which are often just a legal way of preserving farmland and structures the way they were centuries ago. So when people come here for leaves or for beaches, a lot of the times what they're coming for is American history.
What are some of the differences between the states, Hillary? How would a person decide if they wanted to go visit the leaves falling, which state in New England they'd choose?
Well, that's a hard one. There are so many similarities, and each have their own attractions, and many ways they overlap. You know, in general, the further north you travel, the more rural the experience. The further west you go in New England, the more mountains you're going to find. When you're in the coastal states, you're going to find more of the rich history, because those were the first areas of settlement and the architecture reflecting that, and the shipbuilding and the trade. New Hampshire's White Mountains, Vermont's Green Mountains are really well-established fall tourism destinations. People always think about mountains and leaves. In Maine, the Western Mountains are a little bit more off the radar screen for people, but people are still coming up, heading more toward Acadia National Park, which, again, there you get the mountains, this time you get ocean.
And given that this is the 100-year park history, isn't this the
It's not only the 100th year anniversary of the National Park Service, but it's also Acadia Centennial as well. So they're celebrating their birthday as well.
I saw that. How would a person decide whether or not they would take a public road and go to any of the state parks as opposed to private places?
I think it just depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for off the beaten track, I think it's probably better to search for historic sites or beaches or parks that are run by towns or nonprofit organizations, which might not have the marketing budget or the connection to the state to get their name out there, but they will be less crowded and sometimes really just as spectacular as the bigger, more famous state parks or national parks.
And when we discuss tourism, what kind of stats are we talking about, Hillary?
I can talk a little bit about Maine. And last fall, Maine received about 9.78 million visitors. 5.8 million of those were overnighters. 3.9 were day trippers. Fall visitors average in their mid-40s. More than half of them are over the age of 45. A quarter of them head to the beaches region, which is along the southern coast, south of Portland, where the state actually has sand beaches as opposed to the rock-bound coast most people associate with it. About another 17% head to down east in Acadia. That would, of course, be Acadia National Park area. Another 14% head to Portland and Casco Bay region. And Portland is, of course, the kind of the cultural hub of the state, and it's on the ocean, and it's a very small, easy navigable city. And then the numbers come down from there, 13% to the mid-coast and Maine Highlands regions. Surprisingly for me, only about 9% visit the lakes and mountains, which are just gorgeous in the fall for foliage.
So this begs another question. You just said that by the demographics, some overwhelming majority of people are in their older years, and they seem to be obviously most easily facile, have the most time on their hands, and probably have some of the greatest amount of money. How do you see this impacting future generations like millennials and younger generations who just won't have the same kind of money to just meander about and stay at a bed and breakfast? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I'm not sure that it's always the case that older people do have more money. I've been reading that in quite a lot of articles about why it's best to travel when you're older, and it's because you have more money. I know that in my case, I certainly don't, because I'm a freelance writer. So I think it's better because you have a bit more life experience and you know what you like. But I also think that millennials are traveling. I've seen quite a bit about how millennials are still loving the classic American road trip. And of course, Airbnb and Uber, other sharing economy type businesses are very much driven by people in their 20s and 30s. I think travel is still for everyone.
And I would add that I also think many of what you think of as the traditional things that appeal to maybe an older generation are really shifting in how they appeal to younger generation. B&Bs are not, and country inns are not, you know, the Victorian wallpaper and dripping with antiques and those kind of places. Many of them are very contemporary in decor now. They're all wired. Of course, you've got Wi-Fi everywhere. They realize who their new audience is, and they're making strides to make sure they're not left out.
I know that you both have your favorite states. Hillary, that would be Maine, and Jana, that would be Connecticut. So let's talk about some of the most popular attractions for each state during the fall. Hillary, what would you like to start with?
Well, in Maine, again, Acadia National Park remains a huge draw in the fall because you've got the mountains of Acadia, and then you have the foliage reflected into the ocean as well as ponds and waterways on the island, Mount Desert Island, which is where Acadia mostly is. That's always a huge draw. In the southern part of the state, the beaches is a huge region that draws a lot of people. And, you know, walking on a beach in the fall is beautiful, especially, again, you're seeing the foliage with the ocean waters, which is a little different from going up into inland areas. York Historical Society is the oldest chartered city, and they do a beautiful job with the preservation and the history there. Maine Maritime Museum, another fabulous place, which, you know, takes care of showcases the state's maritime history. But there are also other ways to see the state, and that's following some of the marked trails. There is an art museum trail that takes you through about 8-9 art museums throughout the state. There's, of course, I think in every state there's wine trails and beer trails. It does draw in a younger demographic. In Maine, the food festivals are huge. Harvest time, of course, you've got pumpkins, for picking, apples for picking, corn mazes, and farms are huge now in Maine. We've got some of the youngest farmers in the country here, and they're growing, so that's wonderful. I also suggest getting out on the lakes, going out on the Songo River Queen and Long Lake in the Naples region in the Western Mountains. You get these fantastic views of the Presidential Range of the White Mountains while you're on the boat. It's beautiful. Or up in the Moosehead area, another gorgeous area. You can go out on a boat called the Katahdin. It's a retrofitted steamship from the logging era. Again, you're into the history of it.
And Jana?
Yeah, well, the most best known, I think, and most popular foliage area in Connecticut would be the northwest corner, Kent and Litchfield, and the area of the Berkshires. I would say that the northeast corner, called the Quiet Corner, is just as nice, a little bit less mountainous, but it's got the hilly areas. It's got all of the outdoor attractions that you could want, and it's going to be less crowded. I would also say the coastal areas, especially the southeast coast. You know, in Connecticut, most of our beaches do charge during the summer, but in the fall, they are free. They're open. Almost every one is open to the public, and no one's there. You get the whole beach to yourself. The weather is still beautiful. You can still see leaves in coastal towns. We also have a lot of great scenic routes, scenic byways. You know, I wouldn't stick to touristy locations necessarily for fall. A lot of things that people look for, like I mentioned earlier, is the historic atmosphere. Look for historic districts, which are not tourist attractions per se, but that's where you're going to find the town green, the beautiful old homes, the old churches, all that history. If you look at a place like livingplaces.com, where they basically just consolidate all the nominating documents for places to get on the National Register of Historic Places. That's a great resource for finding some of these very old historic neighborhoods where you can see the leaves as well as the New England atmosphere in Connecticut.
That brings to mind places like Newburyport, Gloucester, Concord, and Sudbury, Providence, Rhode Island. I can think of a number of places. Hillary?
Oh, definitely. You know, when you're looking at Massachusetts, you've got Old Sturbridge Village and Old Deerfield, both of which combine the history and the heritage along with beautiful scenery. In Vermont, I think there are some beautiful places up in the Northeast Kingdom. You get up into St. Johnsbury, you have the beautiful Library of the Athenaeum. You've got the Fairbanks Museum with a natural history and planetarium, and the Maple Grove Museum, of course, you know, Vermont, Maples, Maple Grove. Great place, you know. And I, of course, with Rhode Island, I always think of Newport and the mansion.
What is your most favorite place, and what is your best-kept secret? And honestly, we won't tell anyone. Hillary?
Oh, that's such a hard one. In autumn, honestly, I think I love going to the Western Mountains because they're a little bit of a best-kept secret in that there just aren't that many people there. People are drawn to other areas, and the Bethel area, Bridgeton, basically from Rangeley, Farmington Rangeley, down through the Sebago Lake region as you're on the western side of the state hugging the Hampshire border. You know, many of these places you're an hour, sometimes even just 20 minutes from a place like North Conway, but you're in this little quiet section. There aren't as many people. Rates tend to be lower. The foliage is just as beautiful. The mountains are just as beautiful. So I think that's, you know, one of my favorite places to go, especially down in Cornish, which is another little town that hugs the border, but it's full of little antique shops and fun specialty shops. It's just a cool little place to go. Best kept secret? I'd probably have to go with the Blue Hill Deer Isle Peninsula. It's just a very artsy peninsula. It's a lot traditional lobstering. It's a place where, depending on where you're, how you drive it, you can be watch both sunrise and sunset over the Atlantic. You can sometimes, it seems from the road signs, you're going north, south, east, and west at the same time, depending on which route number you're on. It's little byways. It tends to be quieter in September and October. But it's gorgeous, and you have little treasures like a place called Nervous Nellie's, which is just this, an artist who has created a little theme park village. It's all free. You can walk through. You can go have a cup of tea in the tea room or a cup of coffee and just kind of enjoy it. You can take a boat from there, from Stonington out to Ailaho, which has a remote section of Acadia. But it gives you a real taste of Maine. But in and you add in Castine, which is an incredibly historic village. It's been fought over by the British, the English, the Spanish, the Dutch over the centuries. And history just fills the town. They've done a beautiful job with it. So you've got a little bit of everything down there. It's quiet. It's not a place to go to party. It's not a place to go a little crazy. But for a quiet, absolutely gorgeous area of the state, that would be my best-kept secret.
We're talking today with two travel writers about the allure of fall in New England and some great places to visit. I am already starting to salivate over warm cider, cinnamon donuts, let's see what else, apple pie, pumpkin pie. It just evokes, all of this just evokes so many memories. Do you agree, Jonna?
Absolutely. And, you know, I wanted to say, since we're talking about favorites, that just because fall has these associations with the countryside, I don't want people to miss out on the cities, because those are my favorite places. I'm very much an urban city girl at heart. I have to plug Hartford, Providence, New London, Portsmouth, lots of great cities where you can take advantage of the perfect fall weather and also get to see some of the best of New England history. And don't let people tell you that they're dangerous, because they're not.
What is happening with regard to the weather? Now that the seasons are somewhat becoming shorter and the weather doesn't always cooperate, do you find that that makes any difference in the scenic beauty of it all, or even in the number of tourists who still come here? Hillary?
Oh, no. Not at all. And the weather is so fickle. The truth is with leaves, if New England has a fall hurricane, the leaves are gone fast. It just goes that way. If it doesn't, we have beautiful leaves for a long time. Mm-hmm. You just never know with what the weather's going to do. Overall, though, at least in Maine, the season is pushing later and later. It used to be after Columbus Day, they rolled up the sidewalks in most of the real seasonal towns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most are going right through October, and some are pushing into November because people want to come. The leaves are often still pretty into like the second or third, sometimes even later, depending on the season, week of the year. Yes, the later you go, and depending on where you go, you may start flirting with snow. But if you're in, for example, the Mount Washington Valley, the North Conway area in New Hampshire, there's nothing prettier than seeing snow on Mount Washington and full-color foliage in the area. I mean, that's gorgeous. You get mm-hmm. the same in Maine, often on Katahdin, which is the northern terminus of the Appalachian Trail. Go up in that region, you may often see snow on the mountain and then just gorgeous foliage around. So, yeah, you just have to go prepared for different types of weather.
I'm struck by the fact that we're talking about traveling, and you're mentioning as many numbers of places where people could hike or walk or camp as you are where they could drive. Let's do a little bit of discussion about the railways. Have any thoughts about that, North Conway?
I'm a fan of the road trip, but I think you could absolutely do a really great fall trip throughout New England just on Amtrak or a local rail right into city centers or town centers. And of course, if you're talking about more of the tourist railways, you can always there's a lot of great rides like the Essex Steam Train. Fall would be a perfect time to take that ride up the Connecticut River from Essex, connected to a boat trip up the river. That would be a perfect way to see foliage from a different vantage point.
And also you have the North Conway Scenic Railroad, the Mount Washington Cog Railway. Hillary, anything else you want to add to this?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of different trains in Maine. There is one in Portland. There is one in Booth Bay Harbor. There's one in the Midcoast area. There's another one up just south of the Rangeley area. There's another one in the Acadia region. Trains are incredibly popular, and in fall, a lot of them are running foliage trips as well.
Mm-hmm. And what would some of the scenic byways be where you would suggest people go to see the best foliage? Hillary?
Let me think on this for one second. For the scenic byways, there are a lot of different ones throughout the state. In the tip of the state coming down, Route 11, there's parts of that are a scenic byway. In the western part of the state, there's for beautiful routes for driving in Maine. if you loop from roughly the Farmington main over into Rangeley, you're on a main state scenic byway. You can continue actually up to the Quebec border and then come back down, come into Rangeley, go around, and then go over an area called Height of Land into the Bethel area of western Maine. And you're on different bits and pieces of scenic byways throughout this region. It's absolutely beautiful. Of course, in the Acadia region, you've got the Park Loop Road, which is part of the Down Eastern Acadia National Scenic Byway. Absolutely gorgeous up there. But you had mentioned also hiking earlier, and I'd love to touch on that if I can.
Sure.
In all of New England, you're going to have great hiking trails. Vermont has the Long Trail, and New Hampshire has the AMC Huts and Lodges, which go through the White Mountains. Great way. They stay high. It's more for a seasoned hiker, somebody who is comfortable hiking. You come over to Maine, and you have the Maine Hudson Trail, which pretty much anybody can do. Depending on which hut you go into, it can be a very easy hike, or you can choose a little more difficult routes. They're wide. They stay low. They're not going up really high on the mountains. And when you're in there, you've got huts that are full service with plumbing, real big plus, and meals, and they're just a lovely way to experience winter.
And again, I'm thinking about the scenic byways like the Kangamagas Highway in New Hampshire, anything circling Lake Wanapisaki, correct?
That one I'm not sure of. I know, for example, when you go, Lake Wanapisaki, of course, is absolutely gorgeous, that whole region. In New Hampshire, I think about driving through the notches, okay? So you've got the Kank, but you can also go through Crawford Notch,
yep,
and Franconia Notch, Pinkham Notch, and going down the western border of Maine and eastern border of New Hampshire, Evans Notch. These are spectacular routes. Some of them are scenic byways, some aren't, but they are just beautiful places to see foliage.
And when you originally made the comment about seeing the leaves resonate and mirror off the water, I think that would include any of the number of reservoirs, the Quabbin in Massachusetts. There are several in Connecticut. You know, you can get a ton of lakes. And I think you also would agree, Jana, about Route 7 up through the Berkshires, you said northwest, going all the way up the entire western side of Massachusetts.
Route 7 is great in the west. My favorite scenic byway is 169, which goes from Norwich up all the way to the Massachusetts border on the eastern side of Connecticut. It goes through very small towns, pretty much unchanged since colonial times, a lot of them. And you get all the foliage. You also get, you know, just beautiful old buildings and a lot of history, restaurants, farms, vineyards. That's a good route. And with reservoirs, you're absolutely right. There's so many small little lakes and ponds and streams where if what you're looking for is photographs of leaves, which is something that I do a lot in the fall, the more rural you get into the agricultural areas, the more places you are going to be able to stop and take pictures freely. And almost any back road or scenic route is going to be perfect for that in the fall.
Mm-hmm. As we run out of time, I'm wondering, what tips would you like to leave the listener with for how to come armed and prepared to really do either multi-states or one state, one area? What are some of the things they really must have with them? Hillary?
I'd say it's really tempting to think, and I see this happens all the time, people, oh, we're just going to take a nice trip and we'll find a little place to stay on the way. Make reservations. Definitely make reservations. It's too often you'll get to where you think you're going and it's full, because especially if it's a destination that people know about, you're not going to find an empty room in peak foliage season. So make reservations. Go prepared for different types of weather. It's depending on where you are in New England. It can be, you know, you may have some cold rain or maybe a little spit of snow. And it could be sunny and in the 70s or 80s. Who knows? You just don't. The other thing is that foliage rolls. It's not one week. Everybody tends to think of it as, oh, Columbus Day weekend, that's peak foliage. No, it's not. It starts in the north and it moves to the south. So you can take in foliage in pretty much every state over 2 or 3 weeks if you want to and get them all in.
And Jana?
I completely agree on those practical aspects. I would also just say, and it sounds contradictory, but do a lot of research and planning, but then also be flexible and allow for exploration as you go, because here, more than any other region, we have a lot crammed into a small area, and we also have a lot that's semi-hidden because we don't like to necessarily brag about what we have, but that information is out there. So do a lot of preparation first. You just have to put in a little bit of effort to find it, and then create an itinerary for yourself that leaves you open for both changes in the weather, which are frequent, as well as the possibility of just stumbling across something on the side of the road that you really want to take the time to explore.
Mm-hmm. May I add one more tip?
Of course.
Don't hesitate to attend a community supper or event of some type. There you will find throughout New England, you know, chowder suppers, soup suppers, bean suppers, whatever. It's a great way to go in, talk to locals, and if you're willing to listen, you'll may get some really good tips on other fun things to do that aren't known anywhere else.
I'm going to be surprised if the listener hasn't heard my pen. It's furiously writing down all these tips. Today we've been talking with two women travel writers and editors about traveling in New England during the fall. Jonna Kaplan can be found at www.thesizeofconnecticut.com, Hillary Nangel at www.maintravelmaven.com. Thank you so much, Jonna and Hillary, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. To the listener, thank you for joining us. And until next time, I hope you take care.